Let's Talk About, a podcast by the University of Vienna.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast. My name is Ina Hahn and I work for the Research Services. With this podcast, we would like to inform researchers about funding opportunities, make services in this area more visible, and provide insights and advice. Let's talk about the Elise Richter program today. This program is funded by the Austrian Science Fund FWF, and to discuss it, I've invited Katharina Wiedlack, who is the PI of a Richter project. Welcome, and thank you very much for joining me for this episode.
Hi, thank you for the invitation.
Before talking to Katharina Wiedlack about her research and her experience with the Elise Richter program, just a few words on the program itself. It is one of the FWF's career development programs, and the target group are female postdocs who have at least 2 years of experience as a postdoc. And the aim of the program is that after completion of the program, the participants have reached a level of qualification that enabled them to apply for a professorship. So, Katharina Wiedlack, you are an Anglicist, and you started your Elise Richter project in October 2019. Could you tell us a bit about your research, especially what you're working on within the Elise Richter project?
Yeah, sure. I'm an American studies scholar. My project is called Rivals of the Past, Children of the Future, Localizing Russia Within U.S. National Identity Formations from a Historical Perspective. And within the project, I analyzed the significance or importance of American-Russian encounters during the late 18th and 19th century. I ask how meeting Russians and traveling to Russia and engaging with Russian art and culture and politics influenced Americans. I start my analysis from the periphery, so to speak, of American studies with the encounter between Native people in Alaska and the Russian colonizers around 1800s. Most historic studies suggest that Americans, like European philosophers and politicians, viewed the Russians as latecomers to modernity. But from the perspective of Native Americans, they were proponents of the colonial project that is at the heart of modernity. So if you see this history from the Native American perspective, it looks very differently. This is my thesis, so to speak. So Russians significantly contributed to the shaping of ideas of modernity and progress in the American eye, and contributed also to the creation of the racialized other, which is the Native population. So this is one aspect of my research. Yet another one that might be interesting is that another encounter was done by African Americans who were interested in Russia and Russian politics. And quite a few of them moved from the U.S. to Russia to escape racist discourses during the second half of the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And although Russia was a tsardom and not free for all citizens, for African Americans, it was free in a sense that they were not targeted by racist hate like they would have been or were in the U.S. So unlike Jewish people, they could find good work and with skills and funding could move up the social ladder. These are two perspectives on Russian encounters that that kind of go against the flow of the usual historic writing and historic view. And I'm interested in that counter-narrative, so to speak.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. And why have you decided to apply for Elise Richter project? And what does this project mean for your scientific career?
Mm-hmm. After I finished my PhD, I was looking for a program that would allow me to work towards a university career, and give me the freedom to also to, on the one hand side, establish myself in my field, but also do interdisciplinary work. And already after my PhD, I looked at the programs of the FWF. And found the Hertha-Firnberg program. And it was for early postdocs, and I was lucky to win a three-year grant. And after this three-year grant, I was ready to work on my habilitation. So I explicitly looked for a program that would allow me the freedom to work on the habilitation and also allow me to work at an institution, the University of Vienna again, but still have time and money to work on my own project and not be involved too much in the university life. And I still think that the Elise Richter program was the right choice for me. And I'm very happy that I could secure the funding, because it gives you so much freedom to do the research, to write, but also go on conferences, do field work abroad. And at the same time, as I've said, it kind of binds you to an institution and allows you to learn about institutional research and teaching life without having all the obligations, right? So it's quite a luxury to be within this program. And of course, it's also a very prestigious grant with a very competitive framework. So winning this grant already establishes you in a way as an excellent junior researcher, because you have to already prove that you kind of know a lot about your field, have interesting research ideas, and have some successes before you can apply to this program. So I think this is very important for every academic career. And it gives you an advantage if you, like, after having finished a program, if you want to apply for further jobs, professorships and whatnot. So within this program, I have the liberty to work on the habilitation and work on my CV. Yeah, and also participate in the life of the English and American Studies department at the University of Vienna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really like the program is matching what you were looking for very well. So mm-hmm. that's great.
Yeah, and maybe I can emphasize that it's also that gives you the liberty to really choose your own topic and your passion. And mm-hmm. in my case, it's between Slavic studies or Russian studies and American studies. It would have been hard for me to find a job where I could do exactly that, right? So I think.
Cool. So let's have a look how you got there. Let's have a look at the application process from your point of view. Do you remember how long it took you to prepare and to write and to submit the proposal?
Mm-hmm. Like from the moment where I decided that I will do this application to the point where I submitted it, I think it was about 5 to 6 months. And I think that is this is an appropriate time to really get from a first idea to, you know, handing in a polished, nicely looking application. I don't know if every person needs that long of time, but for me, I'm rather somebody who plans stuff early. And when I had a concrete idea, I also went to my colleagues and discussed it with them and asked them if they think it's an appropriate idea for such an application. And I also went to the research service at my university, at the University of Vienna, and got the first information about the whole proceedings, like how you get to the signatures and all that stuff. So yeah, and I think that for me, that was a good decision to do it early on, to be able to concentrate on the process and not get stressed. And then once I submitted, I think the FAF needs about 6-7 months to come to a final decision.
Mm.
And it's also, the FAF is very clear about their timelines. They published the time frame. So there are no surprises, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. There's usually one round of applications in spring and one in autumn. Mm-hmm. You can prepare for that because it's always similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said you prepared for like 5 to 6 months and then you waited another 6 months. So
yeah,
the lead time for the actual start of the project in October was more than 1 year.
In my case, yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a long time. And I mean, my advice to people who are in the same situation is always to think ahead. Think long ahead.
Yes. And what actually adds to this time is also the requirement that you must have done some preliminary work for the planned project before the application. So, okay, strictly speaking, this is not part of the time you need for the application, mm-hmm. but you have to bear that in mind when you are applying.
Exactly. And when I said I started with the idea 5 or 6 months before I handed in, that was the moment where I had an idea and I had some, you know, very preliminary work being done before so that I could formulate my thesis. And then, but then within these 5 months, there was also a time of research, you know, finding the you know, the situation for these kind of questions in your field. And so, yeah, this research time is kind of like part of the 5-6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think was the most difficult part of the proposal? Or was it difficult or was it easy for you to write this?
I mean, I wouldn't say that there is something particularly challenging about the Elise Richter program application per se, but I think every application is challenging because there are so many factors that you have to consider, but that you don't know exactly in advance, right? So it's not enough to come up with a great idea, but you have to anticipate what you will do in your research without really, you know, knowing. You have to make a time plan and anticipate a lot of stuff. You have to, you know, imagine what the reviewers will want to hear, so to speak. And this can be very challenging. And I know also from talking to my colleagues that sometimes you can get caught up in these unknown factors. And a lot of people try to, you know, anticipate what the reviewers would say or think or what they want to hear. And I think to some degree, this is good. You should know who the audience is who reads your proposal, but you shouldn't get caught up in that because it can drive you crazy. And also it can distract you from your idea. And for me, I have always tried to, you know, stay true to my idea and really proceed in a way that I find interesting, and then only in the second instance try to imagine who would read your application, but not writing for somebody else, right? For yourself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's always a good idea to make it as easy as possible for the reviewers to understand the proposal, like with sticking to the guidelines, etc.
Exactly.
But you're also right that it's important to stay true to your idea.
Yeah.
And not to change it completely so that it fits into this funding program. Because if you have to do so, maybe mm-hmm. the funding program and the project idea that you have are not really compatible.
Yeah, I would say so. And to make sure that your ideas come across, it's always good to ask people to read your application. I know some people are very hesitant because they feel like, for one, they don't want to burden their colleagues with reading their stuff. But then also they are shy about their ideas. But I think, for me and for a lot of people that I know, it has worked very well to, you know, share the application with a friend, with colleagues, and get feedback, even if they're not from my field. the feedback is so important, because then you know, okay, is it understandable what I have been writing for so long? Because sometimes you can get caught up in your ideas, and you are an expert already in this field, so you take stuff for granted, and then when you give it to another person, they might see that there are some links missing or that the language is not accessible for everybody. And so yeah, for me this was always extremely important to get feedback.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Do you have any other recommendations, or what do you think are the most important things to consider when writing an application for an edition project?
I mean, as I've said, the first important thing is that you have a good idea that you really can stand behind. It doesn't make sense to write for somebody else, but you should really be passionate about your research question and about your subject. So, I mean, at least for me, this has always worked out. The second thing that I would say is that writing a research application is a very specific genre of writing, and it needs to be studied to some degree. So what I really recommend is to, you know, to read as many applications as possible, also from other people. Even if they're not from your field, or even if they weren't successful, it is really good to, you know, get the feeling for this kind of genre. So, and I was very lucky. I had peers and colleagues that would share their applications with me and would allow me to read them and learn from their mistakes or their successes. And I'm, I'm always also trying to share, or I'm sharing my stuff with other colleagues, because I think that's the only way how you can really learn about this genre and become an expert, not only in your field, but also in this genre of application writing. It's unlike any other form of academic writing or non-academic writing. It's very specific, and I think you also need to realize that and need to learn that. And I think there is no other way than learning from reading other applications. I mean, of course, you also have to follow the guidelines that the FWF gives you. This is very important. They are very strict about it. But then also it's a little bit more than that, right? It's kind of like, what kind of information do you have to pack in with what kind of language and stuff like that. And I think, yeah, it's, you need a lot of skills to write this text. And I think it's that the more you are clear about what skills that are, the better you will be, and the better will your successes will be. And then again, topic wise, I would also suggest to talk to as many people as possible about your, you know, about your ideas, about the thesis that you have, because yeah, it's really important to get the feedback. Or for me, it was always important to get the feedback and learn what people think about it. And I mean, of course, the Elise Richter program does not address early career scholars, but rather scholars that are already experienced. But still, I think you can still learn from the experiences of others, and sharing your ideas makes them only better, in my experience.
I agree. And last question. Was there anything you would have liked to know beforehand, or was there anything surprising in the application process?
I think there is always something that I don't read guidelines close enough, and then in the end I'm always like, oh, I forgot something. But I don't think that it's particular to this kind of program. I think it's what happens, because there are so many factors that you have to consider. So that's also why it takes such a long time to plan this process, because in the end there's always like, oh, I forgot this signature, or the time for the signatures needs longer. I don't know, there is always something.
Yeah. So yeah, you would say, like, apart from the guidelines that FWF provides and that you have to consider, you should also, like, early on inform yourself about the process at the university, like how long does the dean or the rector need for signing the application, and like all the internal procedures that are necessary for getting the application through.
Yeah, and I again want to emphasize that I always talked early on with the research service at the University of Vienna, and that always paid off. It saved me time, and people there informed me about stuff that I have to, you know, pay particular attention to. Yeah, so it was always very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great feedback also for us, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything else you would like to add?
I mean, it's just a minor thing, but one last advice that I would have is also to have the application, if possible, language edited, and really pay attention also to the presentation, and really stick to the FWF guidelines, but also like pay attention that it's, you know, that everything is as nicely looking as possible. I think that makes also a great difference. I mean, it's not that I can prove that it makes a difference, but I have the feeling that that my colleagues who pay attention to that kind of formal criteria and language have better results.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this also goes back to having enough time to really pay attention to that.
Yeah, and it also goes back to this point that we mentioned before, to make it as easy as possible for the reviewers to get through your proposal, because nobody likes to read a proposal where the layout is just off-putting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's a minor or banal thing, but I think it makes a difference. Yeah. Because, yeah, you can have brilliant ideas, but if they are not able to shine, then it doesn't help. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, yeah, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and letting us know about your experience. And, yeah, I think that future applicants can really benefit from the insights you let us have today. So thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
So let me now give you some more information on the Elise Richter program. There are usually two calls per year, one in spring and one in autumn. And the next one, at the time of recording, is open from April 12 to May 28, 2021. An Elise Richter project can last 12 to 48 months, but in case you already had a Hertha Finnberg project, you can only apply for 36 months. There is no age limit, but you have to have at least 2 peer-reviewed publications, and the publication output has to reflect the stage of your scientific career. The Elise Richter program is subject to the territoriality principle that FWF applies to some of its programs, so please check the guidelines to see if you are eligible for applying in this regard. So what can you actually apply for? The main cost item is the personnel costs for the principal investigator. So that's you as the applicant. And that's a senior postdoc salary. And the level of employment must be at least 50%. And per year, you can also apply for project-specific costs up to €15,000. And these project-specific costs must include all other costs besides your salary. For example, travel costs for field trips or the salary of a student assistant. Another important thing I'd like to mention is that FWF's women's advancement programs are also open to other underrepresented genders, like when you're non-binary. Thank you very much for listening to today's episode. You find the link to the Elise Richter program and the link to Katharina Wiedlack's website in our show notes. And in case you have any questions, you can always contact me or my colleagues from the research services. Bye!